The goal for today is to prove that most continuous functions with real value on the interval, it doesn't really matter that it's on the interval, are nowhere differentiable. So surely you know about continuous functions that are not differentiable, like absolute value of x, okay? But the claim is that in some sense, most, by far most, continuous functions not only are not differentiable at some point, but in fact are nowhere differentiable, have no derivative anywhere. Okay? So I guess that tells you that sort of the whole subject of Math 157 is sort of the discussion of something extremely rare and delicate, differentiability. Okay? Anyway, optimistically, we will finish this today and even discuss the final. If not, we will do it on Wednesday, which is U of T Monday. Okay? And my real hope is that on Wednesday, we will do the Hilbert 13th theorem, or rather the Hilbert 13th problem, which is the Kolmogorov-Arnold theorem, which could be paraphrased as saying that nobody needs Math 257. Of course, it's a bit sort of, it's not quite right, okay? I mean, but basically it says that in calculus, or that all functions are functions of one variable, except one, in some sense, okay? The point of this is that it's supposed to be a gem. If we do it, it will not be for the exam, it will be just for fun, and it really is a gem. Okay? Anyway, for now, let's start with this. So, what does most mean in topology? Okay? So, let me give you a definition. So, you know what? Let me first start by informally defining a thin set. So I think the word thin set is often used for something else. So it's in quotes, okay? It's for today. A set is called thin if it is closed and has empty interior. Closed and has empty interior. Okay? Basically, think inside the plane a curve. So the curve itself is closed as a subset of the plane, but it has no interior. Okay? On the other hand, within a line, an interval, even though it's the same dimension, okay, is not thin, because within the line it does have an interior. Okay? So thin means within a context, okay? Has an empty interior within that bigger space, okay? So, definition, a bare space, definition, a bare space, bare is the name of a mathematician, it's not the name of an animal, so a bare space is a space X such that any countable collection of closed sets with no interior in X has a union that has no interior. Okay? So a bare space is a space so that if you take countably many of these thin sets, then the result might not be thin in itself, but at least it's not chunky. Okay, so think of has no interior as not chunky. Okay, So, okay, so accountable union of somehow thin sets is can be too big. Intuitively, it seems to be true in the plane, right? Because if you take countably many curves like this, you will never be able to cover a ball. Okay? So my theorem, or the theorem I'm about to state, is that indeed the plane is a bare space. Okay? So, theorem, a complete metric space is bare. Sorry, is bare. Okay. So how is this related to saying to the statement up here? So later I will tell you that the space of all continuous functions from the interval to the real form a complete metric space. And inside a complete metric space, there is a reasonable notion of a small set. A small set is a set which is the union of countably many thin sets. Why? Or in what sense is it small? First of all, it has no interior. And furthermore, it keeps being small even if you take two of these and union them together. Because if you take two countable unions of thin sets, it's again a countable union of thin sets. So even if you take the union of two small sets, it will still have no interior, and so on. So in a complete metric space, there is a notion of smallness. And what we will prove is that the set of continuous functions that do have a derivative somewhere is small. So in some sense, most continuous functions have no derivative anywhere. Okay, are not differentiable anywhere. So this is the scheme, but let's start with the proof of this theorem. Okay, so proof, and again, let's start with a picture. So I have, here is my space, and it's a complete metric, complete metric, okay? And I have a countable union of I have a countable collection of closed sets in it, and I don't want to draw it yet, because I want to draw it step by step, okay? But just think in your mind that I have countably many closed sets here. I want to show that the union has no interior. Okay? If the union had an interior... Okay, sorry. Saying that the union has no interior is the same as saying that every open set intersects the complement of the union. Namely, no open set is fully contained in the union. Okay? So give me an open set, U, or maybe if you want you can call it U0. Okay? And, let's wait with the name for later. And I want to show that some point in this set is in the complement of the countable union of closed sets. So take the first closed set, call it F1. And since it's closed and has no interior, it does not contain U. If it did contain U, it would have interior. So therefore, I can find a point away from the first set, from F1. And in fact, I can find a whole ball away from F1. Then, give me set number two, and again, my idea will be to concentrate on this ball, because I want to find something in the complement of the union of the F1s, so I'll make sure that I always stay inside this ball, and therefore I'll be outside of F1. Now comes F2, here is F2, and again, since F2 is closed and have no interior, I can find a ball inside a previous ball that doesn't intersect F2. And then I'll keep going this way, and I'll get the list of centers of these balls, and then the sequence of centers of these balls will converge because we're in a complete metric space. And it will converge to a point which is inside all of these balls, and therefore outside all of the closed sets. And I've achieved what I wanted to achieve. Okay? So that was the sketch. Now let's write it up. So let F1, F2, up to, well, not up to, and so on, be countably many closed sets having no interior. My goal is to show that the complement of my goal is to show that the complement, sorry, that the union contains, the union of these has no interior, meaning that no open set is contained in the union. Okay? So my goal, given any open U inside X, we want to show that U minus the union of all of the FIs is not equal to the empty set. So that U is not a part of the interior of the FI, of the unions of the FIs. Okay. So now let's do the inductive process that I just promised. Okay? So let U minus F1 is non-empty because U has interior and F1 has no interior. So U minus F1 is open because we subtracted a closed set from an open set, and non-empty. Right? If it was empty, it would mean that U is contained in F1, but then F1 does have an interior, so that can't be. So pick some point x1 inside U minus F1, and since x1 is a point inside an open set, it means that it contains a ball that's completely inside this open set. So pick some number R1 which is greater than 0, that's the radius of this ball. And in fact, just to be just so that things don't get messy, let's make it smaller than 1 over 1, which is also called 1. Okay? And such that the ball around x1 of radius r1 is completely contained in U minus f1. Okay? And now, let's continue. So now, you know what? In fact, I want to go a little bit further. I want the closure of this ball to be completely contained in U minus F1. Okay, if you can find a ball, you can always shrink it a little bit so that its closure will also be contained in U minus F1. So instead of taking the original R1, take half of the original R1. Okay? So, now let's continue. So now I'm restricting my attention to this ball. So now the ball around x1 minus, of radius r1 minus f2 is open, well, it's open because this is open and we subtract the closed set from it. And non-empty, well, it's non-empty because had it been empty, it would mean that this ball is contained in F2, but F2 was assumed to have no interior. Okay? So it's open and non-empty. So pick X2 and also a number R2 which is greater than 0 and smaller than 1 over 2 such that the ball about X2 of radius R2 and in fact even its closure is contained in U minus F, sorry, not U minus F1, but inside B X1 R1 minus F2. And then continue, and by induction, find a series, find a sequence, xn and rn, such that, let's see, first of all, each rn is between 0 and 1 over n, and two, the ball of radius xn, sorry, in, of center rn and radius rn, even its closure is contained inside the ball of radius x, sorry, around xn minus 1 of radius rn minus 1 minus f. N. Okay? So I just verbalized the construction that we that I started doing over here. Okay? Then we have that okay. You know what? Let me just well, sort of, this is not a part of the assumption, but let me continue this inclusion. So, in fact, this is a subset of the ball of radius, oh, sorry, around xn minus, so the ball around xn minus 1 is a subset of the ball of radius Rn minus 2 around Xn minus 2 minus Fn minus 1. And then I further subtract from it Fn. Okay? And in fact, I can go on like that and find that at the end, it's a subset of the ball, or in fact, it's a subset of U minus F1 minus F2 minus all the way down to minus Fn. Okay? So now let me make two claims. So claim one, so the sequence Xn is Cauchy. Why is it Cauchy?
Because
the radiuses of the balls go to zero, and beyond position n, all elements of the set of the sequence belong to ball number n. Okay, so if both n and m are greater than n, then xn and xm both belong to the ball around xn of radius 1 over n. And so the distance between the two is at most 2 over n, and this goes to 0. So this is a Cauchy sequence. So, completeness. If we have a Cauchy sequence, it converges. So let x be this limit, and then I claim that x belongs to the ball around xn of radius rn. In fact, well, I'll only assert that it belongs to the closure of this ball. Why? Well, if all elements of a sequence beyond a certain point belong to this ball, then the limit must be in the closure of the ball. Right? The limit of a sequence will always be in the limit of a sequence which is inside a set will be in an accumulation point, will be in the closure of that set. So at worst, we're in the closure of this ball. Okay? But anyway, if we're in the closure of this ball, we're still in the complement of Fn. So we are still in the complement of, the previous ball. Well, we're in the previous ball minus Fn. So x does not belong to Fn. But that was true for any n. So for any n. So x so x belongs to the complement of the union, so x does not belong to the union of all the fn's, yet x belongs to this. In particular, it belongs to the first of the balls, which was contained inside U. So, we found a point in U, which is not in any of the FIs. And so, U minus the union of all the FIs is non-empty as required. And that's the end of this proof. Okay. By the way, the proof has a variant, so maybe I'll just state it without proof. So theorem, a compact T2 space is also bare. Why? Basically do exactly the same, except the punchline, except the very end is a little bit different. So again, sort of start from an open set and remove F1 from it. Well, the word ball doesn't make sense, but you can still find an open set whose closure is disjoint from F1, and then within that open set, cut out F2 and find another open set and keep going this way, so that the closures are nested inside each other. And then remember that there is a closed set characterization of compact spaces. And well, one of the ways of saying it is to say that if you have a nested sequence of closed sets, then its intersection is non-empty. So instead of taking the limit of the midpoints, you take any point in the intersection of all the closed sets that you find along the way, and the proof continues the same way. So I will not state the proof right now, only state that it's actually pretty much the same. Okay. Now, this theorem, or this definition, a bare space, and the fact that many spaces are bare, has many useful applications. But I want to show you perhaps, well, the craziest one, the one I just started stating at the beginning. Okay? But first, let me restate the bare property. So a space is bare if and only if. So you see, it's, if you remember, we had the statement for compactness using open sets, and then we looked at the complements and had a restatement of compactness using closed sets. So I want to do kind of the opposite here. So bare was phrased in terms of closed sets. Okay? It was about countable collections of closed sets that have no interior. What's the complement of a closed set that has no interior? Yeah?
Open and dense.
Open and dense. Open whose, right? Open whose complement has no interior, meaning open whose closure is everything. Okay? So bare is the same as saying that every countable collection of open dense sets. Okay, so when we talked about the sets themselves, when we talked about it in terms of closed sets, we looked at the union. So if I now switch to talking about the complements, I should be talking about the intersections. Okay? Has a something intersection. Now, what's the something? Yeah?
The intersection is open dense as well.
Not open, just dense. Right? The union of countably many closed sets, I never asserted it is closed. I only asserted it has no interior. The complementary to having no interior is to be dense. But I'm not asserting that it's open. So has a dense intersection. Okay. And now, oh, so you know, if you were to think of a countable union of thin sets as a small set, then you should be thinking of a countable intersection of open dense sets as somehow a big set. So in a bare space, a countable intersection of open dense sets is sort of big. Well, in what sense it is big? First of all, it is non-empty. In fact, not only it's not empty, it's dense. And second, if you take the intersection of two such big sets, it still is big, because it's the same. So it's almost everything in some sense, right? Because if you take the intersection of two such things, you still get almost everything. Okay, so anyway, this said, let me state the following. So first of all, the space X, which is the space of continuous functions on the unit interval taken with the so-called infinity norm or infinity distance. So I think it was defined at some point. It's the uniform distance. It must have been given as a in an exercise. But anyway, let me define it nevertheless. So the metric applied to two functions f and g is defined to be the supremum of f of x minus g of x. So the supremum of the distance of the values of the two functions. And since we're talking about a compact space, if you want, you can replace supremum by maximum. It makes no difference. Okay? So this space, I claim, is metric. Well, metric is clear. I gave it as a metric. So I'll only assert that it is complete and hence bare. And in it, the set of continuous nowhere differentiable functions is big. So in some sense it's big. Not only it's dense, and if you take So I have to show several things. So first of all, the fact that X is complete is actually rather easy. Okay? Why? So if Fn is a Cauchy, so it's a Cauchy sequence of functions, then for any specific point in the interval, you look at the, so again, here is my picture, here is my interval, I have a sequence of functions, and I know that as a sequence of functions, it is Cauchy in this metric. So for any x like this, the sequence fn of x, so I pick some specific x and look at the sequence of values, is itself Cauchy. Why? Because by definition, the distance between two values is less than the distance between the functions. The distance between two functions is the supremum of the distance of their values. So the distance between any two values is less than the distance between the functions. If the distances between the functions go to zero, then the distances between the values also go to zero. So this sequence is Cauchy. So it has a limit. Call this limit f of x. Now, a very simple exercise is to show that the sequence fn converges to the sequence f, and in fact, it converges to the sequence, the sequence fn converges to the function f in the metric space x. And in particular, well, strictly speaking, I should be saying converges to F uniformly. Uniformly. Hence, we've shown at some point that a uniform limit of continuous functions is continuous, so F is continuous. Hence, F is continuous. Hence, F is inside our space, hence fn converges to f in x, which means that our space is complete. Okay? So this requires a little bit of extra words, which I plan to skip because I really want to come to the point. Yes?
So you're using the fact that the reals is complete.
Yeah, I'm using the fact that the reals themselves are complete.
In the proof,
In the proof, because here is a sequence of real values. It is itself Cauchy, so it has a limit in the reals. And by the way, that's the only thing I'm using. So in fact, equally well, instead of looking at functions with values in the reals, we could have looked at functions with values in some other complete metric space, and everything would work just as well. Okay? Anyway, so now my goal is to show that the set of knower differentiable functions is a union of open dense sets. And the open dense sets I'm going to write have a strange definition. So here it is. So let UN be the set of all functions. So really, I mean functions in this space, naturally, such that the following crazy property exists, holds. There exists a partition, a partition of the unit interval. This just means a sequence x0 less than x1 less than so on up to less than xn, which is equal to 1. So there is a partition of the unit interval into n pieces. This n is the same n as that, such that, first of all, the size of each interval in the partition is small. So xi plus 1 minus xi is less than 1 over n for every this n is not necessarily the same, so let's make it p. There exists a finite partition but not necessarily with the same size, okay? But I want each interval to be at most 1 over n, and 2, I want, the derivative of the function f as computed on the ith interval to appear to be very, very big. So more precisely, f of xi plus 1 minus f of xi divided by xi plus 1 minus xi should be bigger than n. Okay? Then I want to claim two claims. One, un is open and dense. And two, sorry, so now I want to look at the intersection of all the UNs, and my claim is that the intersection of all the UNs is contains only functions which are nowhere differentiable. So two, if some function f belongs to the intersection of all the UNs, then f is continuous. Well, of course it's continuous because we're talking about the space of continuous functions, and nowhere differentiable. Okay. So, I don't know if it fits in 9 minutes, but let's try. So I'll give all the proofs schematically. So proofs. So first of all, why is UN dense? So, all I have to do is to show you that given a continuous function, I can find near it a function that belongs to UN. Right? What's a function that belongs to UN? It's a function that can be, so that the interval can be partitioned into many pieces, on each of which the slope of the function is extremely high. Okay? So basically basically look at a function that looks like this. Okay, so take your original function, add epsilon to it, subtract epsilon to it, and within this gap that is created, write a function that wiggles from a tiny bit above our function to a tiny bit below our function, back and forth, and let the xi's be the tips of this wiggle, and that's a partition of the interval, and the slope between any two tips can be arranged to be as big as you want. Okay? So this is the first thing. The second thing is kind of cute. Why is UN open? So the thing is that the phrase "there exists" means take the union over all. So let me be more specific. The set UN can be rewritten in the following way. So instead of saying all the Fs for which there exists a partition, let me fix a partition and consider the Fs that work with that partition. So it's the union over all partitions 0 equals x0 less than x1 up to less than xp, which is equal to 1, such that the ith interval in the partition has length less than 1 over n. So over all such partitions, take well, take the union over all such partitions of the functions f such that f of xi plus 1 minus f of xi divided by xi plus 1 minus xi is greater than 1, or sorry, greater than n. Okay? Now, this thing written here is a certain function applied to the function f. It's a certain operation applied to the function f. So call this phi of f, where phi is an operation. So it takes you from the space of all functions to the real numbers. So it's easy to check that phi itself is continuous. Why? Because all that it involves is evaluating f at a point, and you can check that evaluating f at a point is continuous, and then applying arithmetical operations, which in themselves are continuous. So phi itself is continuous, so un is equal to the union over all partitions of phi inverse of the interval from n to infinity. Now, phi inverse of an open interval is open. A union of open sets is open. So un is open. Done. Okay. And then the last thing, and we have 3 minutes for it. So I claim that if a function f belongs to this intersection, then it is nowhere differentiable. So proof of two. So suppose you had a function f belonging to this intersection. Okay? This function f, well, you know what, maybe I made it unnecessarily big. So this function f, suppose it was differentiable somewhere. Okay? So suppose it was differentiable here, by contradiction. Okay? If it was differentiable at some point, it would have a derivative. The derivative would be a finite number. What's your favorite finite number? Obviously 7. Okay? So, suppose the derivative was 7. What does it mean that the derivative is 7? It means that within a small range, if you look at the slope coming into this point, or the slope coming out of this point, then they're close to 7. Okay? So maybe this slope will be 6, and this one will be 8, but within some small range, the slopes will not vary outside of 6 and 8. Okay? But if this slope is 6, and this is true for any point inside this interval. Now, an aside, if you have a little, it's a little bit of a triangle inequality for slopes. So if you have a triangle whose, in which the slope here is greater than 6, and the slope here is less than 8, then the slope going in between is also, so this slope is between 6 and 8. And it's intuitively clear, because it's clear that, the intuition is that the slope here is bigger than this slope here, so it's bigger than 6, and it's less than this slope, so it's less than 8. Okay, and the arithmetic is not much harder than the intuition. Okay? But our function, so this function, belongs to the intersection of all the UNs. So in particular, it belongs to U9. Okay? But, sorry, not U9. Well, you know, I don't know what this range is. Let's say this range is 1 over 100. Okay? So let's say it belongs to U100. If it belongs to U100, it means that I can find a partition of the interval so that the distance between neighboring elements of the partition is at most 1 over 100. So you'll have one of them to the left and one of them to the right. And the slope between these two is greater than 100. But 100 is greater than 8, so we got a contradiction. Okay? I guess, again, I said it in too many words, but the short form is if a function is differentiable at some point, then in a neighborhood of this point, the slopes cannot go to y. If the derivative is 7, then in the neighborhood of that point, the slopes will be near 7. However, a function in U100 will have slopes going extremely wild, much more than 7. And that's the end of the proof, and I will not say in any more detail. I guess I really wanted to say this proof, and I really know, and I really knew that there was no time. So I said it as quickly as I could. Okay, so we still need to discuss the final. Do we do it in the next 5 minutes over break or on Wednesday? You know what, so is there a class after us?
Yes, I think they have Hindi, there's a Hindi class or something after us.
Okay, so very, very quickly, I actually have extremely little to say. It will be pretty much the same as the midterm, well, with different questions and different material. The material of the midterm is included, but also everything since the midterm. Absolutely everything is included. I suppose, you know, the story about bare spaces in, but if I'll give you something from the last 5 minutes, it will have to be heavily hinted. Okay? Material is, as always, every single proof that we went through, every single homework assignment that was assigned, and possibly creative questions, but this would have to be relatively easier, okay? It will be, you know, 5 or 6, or choose 5 or 6 out of 6 or 7 or something like that. My recommendation for preparation is much more than doing exercises. It is read absolutely everything in the material and make sure that you understand absolutely everything that you read. That's all.
Did you have a